Okay. Is it too high or low? I always have a phobia because I'm going to hit this by accident. Because I start flailing my arms like Kermit the Frog or something. And is it working now? Okay. Yeah, I had to tell you a story. Napoleon gave me permission to mention this to you, but it's really kind of neat. I asked Napoleon when he came. I said, "How'd you get here?" You know, because I thought, you know, I hope you didn't walk or something. And he said, "No." He says, "I have a Muslim friend, and he gave me a ride to work or to here to worship." I had to think, "Wow." I mean, with all the Islamic stuff going on in the world, it's kind of neat to see that today a brother in Christ was given a ride to worship with us by someone who oftentimes we forget that these are human beings. And if a Muslim could give a ride to church, then a church could give the Christ to a Muslim. So think about it. Anyway, all right, well, we're going to continue a lesson, part two of what we started last month for Sunday evening. And then next Sunday evening, we'll have a short devo on the value of singing. And then Mount Valley Christian University will go ahead and OVU will join us in a song worship unto the King. And what we covered is to show the historicity of Christ. You see, it's one thing to say Jesus Christ rose from the grave. He came back. He's back from the grave. But can you prove that? At least make a reasonable attempt to prove that. Because I think until we do, we're always at risk of, at least minimally, of never being able to convert a hard convert to Christ, somebody who might not even believe in God at all. Or at the same time, when our faith is tested, we need to be able to go back to the Bible and prove something from a logical sense. And so what we did was we covered some of these historians from ancient history who all mentioned Christ or mentioned some exposed followers of Christ. They said something early on in the history about Christianity. And every single one of these, there's not one single Christian mentioned in this list. You have Thales in 52 AD, Maribar Serapion, 73 AD, Tacitus, Talmudic writings, Josephus, Pliny the Younger, Suetonius, Lucian, Celsus, and Porphyry. All mention Christ in those periods of time, either mention followers of Christ, the movements of Christ. They either say Christ was a man, claimed to be God, died at the hands of Pontius Pilate, confirmed this historical fact. One of them was even arguing about with another he recorded in his history of two soldiers arguing about why did the sun go dark the day that Christ was crucified. Jesus was confirmed by all of these as a real person of history. And that's important to understand because as I summarized towards the end of last lesson is that Tiberius, Caesar, I mean, we've all heard of Tiberius, but did you know in the 150-year span from the time that he died, the 150 years after he died, he's only mentioned by 10 ancient sources within that time frame. And one of them is Luke from the Bible. Only 10, and yet Jesus in the same time period is mentioned 40 times. Four times as much as the emperor of the known world. And yet, you still have people have the audacity to say, well, Jesus wasn't a real person of history. That's a joke. Okay? In fact, as I quoted, a famous professor, a Jewish professor, quote, even the most bitter opponents of Christianity never expressed any doubt to have Jesus having ever lived. It's just, if somebody said, see, the reason why I'm bringing that up is, in order to have Jesus raised back from the dead, you have to prove that he lived and then died. Can't be any resurrection if there wasn't a living Jesus, and you can't kill the living Jesus off unless if he's alive. So death, burial, resurrection, that's what we want to confirm. The core of the Christian faith. And so with this in mind, since Luke was one of the ancient writers who mentioned in that realm of time in which we compare Jesus and Tiberius, and Jesus is more real person in history than Tiberius, let's go ahead and use the common writer they have for both, and that's the book of Luke. And what's neat about Luke is that Luke was an historian. He wrote in details. He was a physician. I mean, he was a well-educated man. And but I wanted to ask you a question. Was Jesus a real person of history? Yes. Second question. Was he a good person? Be willing to ask whoever it is you're studying with, somebody who might even doubt the historicity of Jesus, ask them, was Jesus a good person? Yes or no? More time than not, they're going to say, well, he was a good man. He was a good man. Where'd they get that from? Not from the 10 people we quoted. From the Bible, the New Testament, and an admission that Jesus was a good person, which most people are going to say outside of this, the structure of these walls, they admit right then that the New Testament is a source of history in which they have made an appeal to make that assumption. They got it from somewhere. They may not have read it directly from the Bible, but they heard it on TV, or they heard it from someone who heard it from someone who goes right back to the Bible. Because the Bible is the only historical text, the New Testament, that goes into detail on the personality and the historicity of Christ himself. And with that in mind, that's why we appeal to Luke. Because they share a common, you know, Luke was the historian of the New Testament. He wrote in great, great detail. He starts his book out, Luke 1, 1 through 4. Theophilus, this is an historical account. He tells that to Theophilus, who most excellent was reserved for a high-ranking government official who would have had access to public records and private records of the government. That he could confirm this. Same thing with Luke 2, 1 through 3. He wrote in detail, Caesar Augustus, Syria, time, place. He tells you what was happening, where it was happening, why it was happening, with great accuracy. And it can be checked. The whole realm of how Luke wrote was, look, check it out. You'll see. Luke chapter 3, verses 1 through 2, Tiberius, Pontius Pilate, Herod, Philip, Licinius, all these high priests, Annas and Caiaphas, he mentions real people of history. Not Barney the dinosaur or Kermit the frog. He mentioned real people of history. In fact, in his book of Acts, he starts out the same way. Drops it into historical context. Check it out. Go ahead, Theophilus. Check it out. Confirm it. So, with this in mind, using the book of Luke, the historical document, that is one of the 10 ancient sources that mention Tiberius Caesar himself. Only one of 10. Okay? Let's see what historical record has to say about Jesus. According to Luke's historical account, Jesus predicted that he would be killed and he would resurrect on the third day. Look at Luke chapter 9, 22. We're going to stay, I think, probably 100% of the way in the book of Luke. I might make a reference outside, but this is something you could study with your friends that you want to convert. Luke 9, 22. Says, the Son of Man must suffer many things and be rejected by the elders and the chief priests and scribes and be killed and raised up on the third. It's very, very important that you establish this fact. That's what we're aiming to prove. And Luke said, Jesus said that. Luke did an investigative research. He was the Geraldo Rivera, only he dealt in truth. He didn't break into Al Capone's vault and find nothing or something like that. He went and he checked it out. He said he did interviews. He researched it out, wrote in great detail. And he says there are eyewitnesses who said Jesus said this. The other historical accounts inside the Bible say it, but we're going to stick with Luke. Now, with that in mind, that being the core of the gospel faith, one of these three are true. Number one, he was a liar. Two, he was crazy. Or three, he was who he said he was. First of all, if he was a liar, you know what he said about lying. He spoke about truth all the time. I mean, nobody spoke more about truth than Jesus Christ did. Lies, white lies, mistruths, misspeaks, all that. He said no. No good. So for you to sell me that, well, he was a liar. He was twisting things. That didn't line up. He was crazy, though. Yeah, that's what he was. Really? You think he was crazy? Tell me, how crazy people who've lost their sanity, could stand toe-to-toe with the greatest minds of the Jewish Sanhedrin and the Supreme Court of Israel, men who were the most studied people on the planet at that time. You could stand toe-to-toe and just completely throw them off with simple, common-sense logic. Now, you're not going to sell to me that he was crazy. You think he was the Christ? He said, I'm going to come back from the grave. Well, Jesus was arrested, according to Luke, and charged as an historical fact. Luke chapter 22, verse 54. I think I have all the verse up there. You can write it down quickly. Having arrested him, they led him away. This is a historical fact. And brought him to the house of the high priest. Verse 63 of Luke 22. Now the men who were holding Jesus in custody, we know according to the historical account, they did that. Also, the whole body in 23 verse 1 and 2 says they began to accuse him. And here were the charges he was brought up on. Three charges, one stuck, okay? Here are the three charges according to the historical document. Says that he was accused of misleading the nation, insurrection, forbidding to pay taxes, tax evasion, and claiming him to be king. He claimed to be a king. And we know that's what the historical record said. In fact, Jesus was questioned by Pilate, a real person of history, and we have the conversation here. In Luke chapter 23:3, Pilate said, "Are you the king of the Jews?" This was the charge that he would be eventually convicted of. He says, "It is as you say." And Pilate said to the chief priests and crowds, "I find no guilt in him." Then you have Jesus being interrogated by King Herod, a real person of history. Luke 23:8. Herod was glad to see him because he'd wanted to see him for a long time. Not a myth, a real person of history. Okay? And he questioned him at some length, but he answered him nothing. So we know, according to this document, that that is true. That he went through a real crucifixion of history. The details they give for crucifixion, I can't tell you how many wise people, with quotes around their wise, not that they were people, they were real people, but we don't know if they were wise because they said the Bible wasn't historically reliable, but yet, the more we learn about ancient history, the more we find out Luke was dead on accurate. Description to a T of what they had. They say in Luke 23, verse 23 through 25, they were insistent with loud voices asking that he be crucified. Their voices began to prevail. Pilate pronounced sentence and the demand was granted. He was thrown, and he released the man, Barabbas, what from who was actually up for insurrection. You remember, he was the known insurrectionist. That's how come they dropped the charge of insurrection against Jesus. And therefore, the only one that would be left, because if you go back earlier in Luke, you find out he paid his taxes. Oh, he paid his taxes. We checked. He's not a known insurrectionist, because I did put a known insurrectionist up here. And you said, we want this guy dead. So the only one could be king, which he said he was king. He didn't deny that. But then Pilate thought, well, you're crazy or something. You're not a king. You don't look like a king. That's why he had him truth scourged. That we have in the historical document, by the way. Then also, Luke provides a historical account of crucifixion. Jesus, including the location, the time, the positions, and events. He didn't say, long, long ago in a land far, far away, Darth Vader nailed Jesus to the cross. It didn't say anything like that. Real people, real locations, real time. We know in great detail when you look at it up close, we know so much of what happened that day. For example, in Luke 23:33 and following, it says they went to a place called the Skull. You know, they've actually identified this area. Actually, it looks sort of like a skull. Not only that, they crucified him and criminals, one on the right hand, one on the left, exactly the way they would have done it. Not only that, verse 44, about the sixth hour at noon, darkness fell over the whole land till the ninth hour. We know when he died at the ninth hour. The sun was obscured. We know the veil of the temple was torn in two. Jesus cried out in detail, Psalm 22, verse 1, into thy hands I commit thy spirit. He says, and then having said this, he breathed his last. We know great details from Luke. Many, many more details. Luke is saying, this is history. Then Luke provides historical evidence that Jesus was buried in a tomb. We know whose tomb it was. It wasn't an unmarked grave that couldn't be confirmed in that day. It was a real person of history who they could say, oh yeah, oh Joe. In fact, it was Joseph. Went, it says in 23 verse 50, went to Pilate, asked for the body of Jesus. He took it down, wrapped the linen cloth and to the rock where no man had ever been laid. It's a brand new tomb. And it follows exact protocol that you would have in those days. For not only that, it said the women who had come out with him to Galilee saw the tomb and how they laid his body. So there were women who saw that evidence of a dead Savior, a dead human being named Jesus, laid in a tomb. Simple summary of the facts thus far. According to Luke's historical account, everybody, according to the testimony, believed that Jesus was dead. The executioners, according to the book of Luke, guess what? They thought he was dead. They made a living killing people. Okay, now they couldn't make a determination on that. They're the losers of all losers. Yeah, I think he's dead. Well, you know, we get paid for a living to kill people. Yeah, he's dead. That the governor said he was dead. The embalmer said he was dead. Being in the death care industry, I know that's probably a good determination. Embalmers know when you're dead. Not only that, the priests, the Jewish leaders, and the apostles, and the women all said he was dead. Eyewitness testimony. Go check it out, Luke says. Remember, this wasn't 2,000 years ago, 2,000 years ago. It was much closer to current events. You could check it out. Not only that, Luke's historical account states that the tomb was empty on the first day of the week. That is an historical fact according to the historical evidence in the history book called Luke. Here's what it says, 24 verse 1, on the first day of the week, at early dawn. Wait, isn't the first day of the week today? Yeah. Wow, you know, they ought to coincide that with the resurrection of Jesus. Let's go on. Anyway, it says that they came to the tomb bringing spices where they had prepared, and according to the evidence, they found the stone rolled away. Huh, that's peculiar. From the tomb, and they entered, they did not find the body of Jesus. Well, we just left it there. But they confirmed, Luke checked it out. He wasn't some fly-by-night guy. He checked it out and he recorded down that tomb was empty. The historical account confirmed that the women reported this to the apostles. Luke 24, 8 and 9. It And they returned from the tomb and reported all these things to the 11 remaining apostles. And according to the historical account, confirmed that Peter went to the tomb to see for himself. Somebody says, well, I just don't believe what those women said. Neither did Peter. Why don't you run with Peter down to the tomb and check it out? Let's see what he saw. Peter got up, ran to the tomb, stooping down, looking in, saw the linen wrappings only. He went away home, marveling at what happened. Wow, that's like really weird. Who would take a body? Luke's historical account mentions that many saw Jesus after the resurrection. Remember, I haven't left the book of Luke yet at all. Luke 24, 13 through 15, there were two of them going that day, entered the village of Emmaus, and Jesus approached and began traveling with them. They saw him. Luke 24, 34, the Lord has risen and appeared to Simon. He saw him. And Luke 24, 46, he himself stood in the midst of the apostles. There were many, many, many people, according to the history books of Luke and Acts, which Luke wrote both, said Jesus appeared to many. Can you kind of tell if there's a live body in front of you? I'm not talking one that's just laying there. You think he's dead? No, one that's eating a meal with you, maybe. Have you ever asked somebody at potluck, you're real, right? Pass the salt. No, you can tell a live body. And there were witnesses. A simple summary of the facts, once again, according to the account of Luke, there were eyewitnesses that can confirm Jesus post-resurrected. So we confirm Jesus was a real person of history, that he went through a real death of history, and there were eyewitnesses who saw him after the resurrection. The historical record makes this very clear. But let's not stop there. According to the historical account, the early responses to the preaching of the resurrection of Jesus should be of great interest to you. Luke's historical account states that Jesus instructed, if you got to be alive to instruct, he instructed the apostles to wait in Jerusalem until the beginning of his post-resurrection phase begins. Luke 24, 49, stay here in the city till you're clothed with power on high. Acts 1, 8, you shall be my witness. Jerusalem, today, and Samaria, and the parts of the earth. He tells them what to do. Wait here. Something's going to happen. Luke's historical account says that Jesus ascended into heaven then in Luke 24, 5. And the historical account states that only 50 days, not 2,000 years, only 50 days from the time that Jesus died on the cross, only 50 days, that 3,000 people, who most of them were in Jerusalem, who knew of Jesus, who probably saw him killed. In fact, Peter says, this day. This day. They could go. Do you think they weren't talking about where did Jesus' body go? Do you think if Jesus wasn't a real person in history, and that he didn't really die and wasn't really resurrected, that 3,000 Jews would go against extreme peer pressure at the anniversary of the law, Pentecost, where there's probably 500,000 Jews, do you think they would succumb to the pressure of converting before them? Are you kidding me? Acts 2, 29-32. Brethren, I may confidently, the historical record says, confidently say to you regarding the patriarch David that he both died, was buried, and in his tomb with us to this day. And so, because he was a prophet and knew that God had sworn an oath to him, an oath to see one of his descendants on his throne, he looked ahead and spoke of the resurrection of Christ. Now, if there was ever a time to dispute it and to dismiss it, they would have done it then. But he didn't. He said he's neither abandoned in Hades, nor did his flesh suffer decay. This Jesus God raised up again, to which we are all witnesses. Check it out. Acts 2:41. So then they had received the word and were baptized that day, added to them 3,000 thousand souls. Acts 2:41. So then they had received the word, they were baptized, 3,000 souls. I repeated that because it's so, so important. You had 3,000 people who'd be the real first people who are going to start being ridiculed and persecuted for what they believed was a fairy tale? Yeah, right. Luke's historical account stated that shortly thereafter, there were a number of converts that responded to the message of the resurrection of Jesus Christ. That's what we're talking about. You remember that same message in Acts 17 that they sneered at? Oh, come on. From back from the dead? That's what they got a reason. But Doug, I wanted to talk about Jesus walking on water and Jesus doing bread. Why do you want to talk about that? If they can't reason in the historical record that Jesus Christ came back from the dead, the message of hope, salvation, what do anybody? Jesus could tap dance on the water and juggle bread. It didn't make any difference. But if they believe in the resurrection from the dead, wow, that's pretty impressive. Not even Doug Henning or David Copperfield or anyone could do that. Acts 4:2-4. They were teaching people, proclaiming in Jesus the resurrection from the dead. But many of those who had heard the message believed what? Believed that he came back from the dead. And the number of the men came to be about 5,000. I don't know about you, but if, let's say somebody here in the congregation passed on, and then I came into church just the following Sunday and said, I saw this brother that we all went to his funeral and saw his dead body and he was buried. He was down at Hardee's eating biscuits and gravy with Elvis. You'd think I was nuts. I couldn't convert any of you to that. I promise you, nobody. Nobody would believe that. You'd commit me. But yet, thousands were willing to convert in the time and place that this happened. This is history. Luke's historical account states that there were constant converts to the resurrection of Jesus. Acts 5:14, all the more believers in the Lord, multitudes, men and women were constantly added to their number. 1, 2, 3, just constantly added. Did you hear about Jesus' death, burial, resurrection? Yeah, I wonder what happened. I heard the Pharisees talk about some thief stole their body, but they had guards on it and they were talking, no, he came back from the grave. Wow. Acts 5:18, they laid hands on the apostle and put them in jail. You know, they were being persecuted. This was going on. I mean, imagine this. Not only would I have to convince you that somebody from the church who would have died and they went to Hardee's eating biscuits and gravy, or here, just make it real scriptural, they ate Friday fish, okay? Does that really make a difference? No. Okay, and then I'd have to get you to believe in that enough to where I could threaten death to you and pass laws against you to not believe it, and yet you still hang on to it? Cuckoo! You would never do that, ever! But they were! That's what the history said. Acts 5:27, and they brought to them, and they stood before the council, and the high priest questioned them, saying, we gave you strict orders. Not just orders, strict orders. Not to continue teaching this name, and yet you have filled Jerusalem with your teaching and intend to bring this man's blood upon us. But Peter and the apostles answered, we must obey God rather than man. The God of our fathers raised Jesus. They told him, don't just talk about his dead body coming back. And then he challenges them and gives him the reason why they must, because he rose from the grave. The very thing you're telling me not to do is the reason I'm going to do it. Because he did come back. Luke's historical account confirms that the generation of the resurrection was even willing to be put to death for that. Would you be put to death for imaginary biscuits and gravy brother who came back, who didn't really come back and nobody even saw for sure? No. But they were for Jesus. Acts 7:59, early on in the church, Stephen, he was killed. Why? Him come back from the dead. James is run through with the sword. Acts 12:2. These people in the generation in which these events took place were willing to die. And that's historical fact, folks. We know that in and outside of the Bible. I'm just sticking in the Bible. Simple summary of the facts. People were in and around Jerusalem who saw Jesus and could remember the death, burial, and resurrection, his empty tomb on the third day, were willing to convert, be persecuted, and killed for what they knew to be fact. But it doesn't end there. I want to take one other example. Conversion of Saul of Tarsus, a real person of history. Luke's historical account states that Saul of Tarsus was a persecutor of the church. Fact. He orchestrated the stoning of Stephen, Acts 7, verse 58. He laid waste to the church and dragged them to prison, according to the historical document, Acts 8, 1 through 3, at the writing of Luke. He slaughtered Christians, Acts 9, 1 and 2. He persecuted them to death, Acts 22, verse 4. The historical account records that Saul had a conversion on the road to Damascus, Acts 9:18, and Acts 22, verse 15 and 16. Ananias was there to finish the presentation, but Jesus confronted him. We know that. That's historical fact. Now, there are some who propose that this dramatic change in Paul was because of a heat stroke. I read that. He had a heat stroke. Now, how many people do you know that have a heat stroke that have changes like what he went through? If that's a heat stroke, I suggest we all get a heat stroke. Ridiculous. Why tarriest thou? Rise and be baptized. Washing and calling on his name. We know what happened. The record says so. Luke's historical account records Saul, name changed to Paul. Like, we can't figure that out. But he was being persecuted for his faith in Christ. Acts 9:22, from the very beginning, when he was in Damascus, the Jews put a hit on him because they used to pay him to go kill Christians, to round them up. Now he's preaching the name of Christ. It's quite a heat stroke. Not only that, Acts 14:19 tells us, but the Jews came from Antioch and Iconium, and they stoned Paul for preaching Jesus coming back from the dead. Acts 16 tells us he was thrown in a jail to get a prison ministry going. Okay? He was beaten and thrown in jail for preaching the resurrection of Jesus Christ. Fact. Simple summary of the facts again. What could have made a life-changing conversion in the life of Saul? You have to understand. Let's say if I came to you and I wanted to raise funds to go over to Pakistan, because I want to lead Osama bin Laden to Christ. Cuckoo, you would never do it. What an investment, huh? You'd be saying, Doug, you could be a dead man. Let me tell you, Saul was Osama bin Laden of that day. He was worse than Osama bin Laden because he had the weight of a nation going in and killing Christians, your brothers and sisters in Christ. Now, you tell me, who would have reached out and touched him with a 10-foot pole? Nobody. And I like what Ed Wharton says about it. Christ went and got himself an 11-foot pole and finished the job. On the road to Damascus, he touched Paul in such a way that Paul went from being Osama bin Laden to preaching at the Church of Christ on Sunday morning. That would be remarkable, wouldn't it? Folks, we have history right here who says that it happened. Luke records that the resurrected Jesus reached him for conversion. And according to the historical evidence, I'd say somebody reached him who's pretty powerful. Maybe somebody not from this world. So the overall summary of this, I can go on and on, but we get done at 6:30 to be scriptural. It says, according to the historically reliable writings of Luke, we can see that Jesus claimed he would be killed and that he would be resurrected from the dead. He would appear to the apostles and others following the resurrection. The historical evidence also says that the apostles started spreading the message of the death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus Christ, asked people to make decisions of which they would be executed and even unto death, and yet they still did it. Fact. And not only that, within days of the ascension, thousands of people who could have easily gone and checked it out themselves and who knew the evidence were still willing to do it. Saul of Tarsus would have been the hardest person on earth to convert to Christianity, and yet, wow, where would we be without his writings? What a convert. Something had to happen on that road to Damascus. You know what I conclude from all this? I conclude a very simple fact. Luke 24, verse 6. He is not here. He is risen. That's a fact. And I hope that you base your life on that fact of history. Now remember, we looked at it from an objective point of view. It's great if you feel that Jesus Christ is Lord. But let me tell you, you'll feel even better if you can consistently prove that He is by using your historical documents to do so. If you want to respond to the invitation, we leave it open to you. If you want to obey the death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus Christ, you believe it, you haven't converted yet, we leave it open for you. If you want to recommit, we leave it open for you as well while we stand and sing.